Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is Brendan Hauser with Evoke Bike. We have an awesome podcast for you today with Madigan Monroe from Trek Factory Racing. You've seen her crushing in U23 races, elite women fields. She has some really great perspectives from the mentors that she has on her team, how high-level athletes just do things differently and what she's learned. Her coach is Kristen Armstrong, obviously a wealth of knowledge. We hit so many different topics that I know there's going to be something in here for you. And if you want to get more specific, look at the show notes below. We have the chapters. And we don't hit every topic in the chapters, but you'll find something for you. And Madigan, thank you so much. We're all going to be cheering for you this year. Everybody, good luck with your training and racing. Enjoy the podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat.
Of course. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Where are you? Are you in Colorado right now?
I am. I'm in Grand Junction. I go to school at Calder Mesa University, so I'm just down there right now.
All right. Good deal.
Yeah.
We'll just jump into this. I'm so curious because you seem to do everything on the bike, maybe not track yet, but how do you introduce yourself to everybody that might not know who you are? And then we'll get into, like, I'm curious how you describe yourself as a rider.
Yeah. So my name is Madigan Monroe. I am 21 years old. I ride for Trek Factory Racing and I also go to school. I go to university at Colorado Mesa, in Colorado, Grand Junction. I am primarily a mountain bike and cyclocross racer. Those are my two main disciplines. So I do mountain biking in the summer and cyclocross in the winter, occasionally mixing in a little bit of road for some training. But yeah, I've been racing bikes since I was about 14 or 15 and kind of got into it through my high school league, through the Nika League, and have been loving it ever since.
That's amazing. So no gravel yet?
Not yet, no. Haven't really dabbled in the gravel.
Well, you might know Eric Bruner, big in the cross world, and definitely. He was just on end up posting this one probably in April, I think it is. And he's right before you. We talked last week and he had made the joke. He's like, well, gravel's more when you're kind of like done with all these other disciplines and older and more diesel. And I was like, Eric, are you taking shots at all these guys? He's like, no, not really. But yeah. So yeah, like, that's awesome.
Not to call anyone out, but.
So I'm always amazed at, I was chatting with AJ August, who always did a big road calendar and then did cross, and you're doing mountain bike and then cross. How do you manage, like, what do you do for a break? Or are you just at this level where you don't need to seem to take much of a break and you just do better kind of jumping from one season to the next? Or how does that come out?
Yeah, I think that's super interesting you brought it up because obviously I think there's a lot of athletes nowadays that are doing all of it. They're doing every single season with really small breaks. And for me, it's kind of a running joke between my coach and I too that I'm quite the puzzle piece for her, figuring out how to keep me fresh and motivated between seasons. But I think generally when I race cyclocross and mountain biking, I'll take a little bit of a break in kind of February and have a slower start to my mountain bike season because the mountain bike season goes so late into, September, October. I'll generally kind of have a slower start, a little bit less volume and hours in that like February, March period, and kind of ramp up my season later than some other people. So I'll take a big break then. And also following the end of the mountain bike season, I'll take a couple weeks off the bike. And it's also about like sprinkling in a couple small breaks here and there throughout the season, like especially if I'm feeling extra tired or needing a little bit of a reset, that can always be added in.
How does that work for, do you have any big races? Like obviously not early in the season if you're taking it slow, but mentally, does that ever throw you off a little bit? Like, you know that you're not at your peak, but you're going to these races and it's like, oh, I kind of want to be better right now, but you know you need to slow down a little bit. Is that hard, or does your coach kind of help you like literally mentally walk through that process?
Yeah, it's definitely tricky. And I think it's hard too for me to see when people start racing really early. Like, you know, you're watching on social media and you're watching these early season races and people definitely are coming out strong, really like firing for all these early season races. And I think I always get a bit of FOMO from that, but the biggest thing is just remembering, like, my coach will always tell me a lot of these people like do have burnouts and it's hard to maintain that fitness throughout the whole season. So it's more important to look at the long term and the end game. So I think that helps me keep it in perspective for sure.
I love that you brought that up, because Cole Patton brought up this FOMO aspect that social media, I think with racing, we haven't really realized until we're hearing you high level athletes talk about this, of even you all seeing other people race throws you off. Whereas for us amateurs, it's definitely like just totally can throw us off kilter. It's like, wait, what are these people in Florida doing in February? Like, I'm still on the trainer. What's this person? Like, oh my God, I'm missing this. And that race happened. Like, I mean, I've been like planning for a race that's 2,000 miles away that I'm not even going to. And I'm like, oh my God, these people are doing the, So it at least makes us feel less crazy that even professionals are having some of this like, angst.
Oh my gosh, it's so easy to like go down that rabbit hole. Like, well, so-and-so did this race and oh my God, they won this race. And it's like March 1st. And, but yeah, at the end of the day, like it's March 1st and we have World Cups in October. So this season is really long, but yeah, the FOMO is definitely real.
You brought up your coach. Who is your coach?
Kristen Armstrong.
Oh, okay. And how did you and Kristen link up?
I kind of reached out to her a couple, like 2 years ago now, when I was kind of getting out of that junior age category and was kind of just feeling like nothing bad had happened between my previous coach, but it was just kind of time for me to reach a new level and kind of gain some more maturity that I thought Kristen could really help me with. Like, she's obviously super strong and experienced racer, and so I thought I had a lot to learn from her. So yeah, just reached out.
What are some of those, when you're saying that, what are some of the things that you feel like that you want to share that you've already picked up from being around Kristen?
I think one of the biggest things for me is I've always been working on my self-confidence and finding that belief in myself to kind of follow my own path and just really stick to what I'm doing to be the best. And I think Kristen is someone who's super tough and really mentally strong, like can really just fully commit to what she's doing and believe in herself. And that's how she's won so many gold medals and jerseys. And so I think just learning from her in that sense and seeing how she handles things has really helped me internalize that and know I can do it too.
What's your path right now that you see? You're so young. So are you 22?
I'll be 22 in April. So not too long. Okay.
So you're still U23.
I am. So I have one more year of U23 and mountain biking. And I think in the immediate future, that's kind of my biggest goal, is to really target this World Cup season. I want to come out to these first couple World Cups riding really strong and kind of get my season going off on the right note. And then World Champs is a big goal for me as well in August. Like looking at long term, I think the Olympics is definitely a big goal. I think, you know, LA 2028 is probably the most realistic at this point. So focusing in on that, but also not putting too much pressure on it because it is still 4 years away, but that's kind of long term.
That's so, when you and Kristen talk about that, I think this is always a really interesting conversation that Jim Miller has shared a little bit on athletes that he's worked with. 4 years away might seem like forever to most athletes that are planning their next few months. What types of topics come up as, because you'll obviously be a totally different woman when you're 4 years down the road. What are you, what comes up when you guys like think about that? Is it a volume thing? Is it like you need to learn how to race against these women, these races? Or like, I'm just really curious about that.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's important to have these long-term goals and to kind of have this long-term perspective, but also not get too focused in on like, oh my gosh, how are we going to do this? Because it's far away. I think the most important thing Kristen and I work on is, okay, how are we going to be our best this season, these races, exactly like you were saying, how are we going to beat these other U23 women right now? And then how will we carry that into becoming an elite next year? What skills and training will we gain over the coming years to be ready for when LA comes around? So it's kind of about, you know, making small steps, but that will all help towards the big goal in the future, but focusing on them right now.
I love that. What's, and now correct me if I'm wrong, you sometimes do the elite races. I think there were some in the States. I actually think you were in Rochester, which is where I'm from. I think you did the, didn't you come in second in that race?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So congratulations. I mean, you're already, For people who don't know, and do you go by Maddie or is it always Madigan? Because I
mean,
social
honestly,
media was
I
Maddie.
Go by both.
Okay.
Like I don't
for
have
people
a
who
reference. Yeah.
Okay. People who have not seen Maddie's results, go. I mean, she's doing some mega races, and not that U23 is not, but I think some people are like, "Oh, it's only U23." It's like, okay. Well, no, she's doing the elite women also. Yeah. And getting on the podium, what do you notice any differences between those races? Obviously, between the age, but I just think it's so cool. I was looking through some of your Instagram, like your teammate Yolanda, and she, you know, to have her commenting is like, well, oh my God, it's your team is so cool.
Yeah.
So, is there a difference in you're obviously like the younger, newer riders and the more established riders? There's like like we've been here and you're the newbie or how did, and what kind of plays out in those races that might be different from just U23?
Mm-hmm. I think it's, that's a good point you brought up because like in the US, most of the races, there is no U23 category. So we're just kind of forced to race elite anyway, which I think is great training. Like I love racing with the elites. Like it's, it pushes you to a new level. It kind of mixes it up like a little bit less pressure in a sense because you're racing against elites and you know you're U23. So in the US, that's why we mostly end up doing elite races. And then you go over to Europe and like the cyclocross season, there's also no U23 World Cups. So you'll also race elite World Cups in cross.
Okay.
But then mountain biking, we have a U23 World Cups season, which is really nice. So we have our own short tracks, cross country mountain bikes, mountain bike races. And then every now and then you'll jump in an elite kind of smaller race, what we call like a C1 or an HC, which is just a little bit different level of racing. But yeah, I think it's, I love racing with the elites. I think it's fun and it's a good mix up and having these teammates like Evie and Yolanda and super experienced riders. I think it's like, you know, I always still get a bit starstruck just to think that they're my teammates, but at the same time, they're super nice and really good mentors. Like they're always willing to ride the course and give you feedback and tips. And we've built a really good relationship and friendship over the past couple years being on the team. So I really look up to them, but at the same time, like they also treat me like a teammate, which is really nice.
That's so cool. I'm showing my true roadiness by not realizing that about the U23 over here. So thank you for explaining that because I was, it's good. I was talking to Sevilla Blanc and before I was like, I have to tell you, I'm totally a roadie. So if I say dumb things, that's why. She's just like, it's all good.
That's what I'm here for. I'm happy to help.
Yes, we need the experience. Yeah. What are some of the things that as you've been around these women who just have so much experience, do you remember anything that has really stuck out as like they maybe just had a shift in how you thought about something in training or racing or your competition?
Yeah, I think it's really good to be teammates with them because like especially Evie and Yolanda, they approach their training and racing pretty differently. Like, you know, I'd say Evie's a little bit more structured and like really follows a plan from her coach, whereas Yolanda's a bit more of like a free spirit and kind of just likes to do her own thing. And obviously they've both won very big events. Like they've been world champions. So it works for both of them, but they're just different. And so I think as a young rider on the team, one of the biggest things I've always realized is yes, they're incredible athletes and they have won really big things, but they're also just normal people too. And really fun to be around. And I think that's the biggest thing is like, sometimes we put these people on like pedestals of like, wow, they're incredible athletes. Like, how am I ever going to do that? But in reality, like they put their shoes on the same way we do every day. So that's kind of like brings in a little bit of reality to it, which in a good way, I think.
Do you think you can take that same viewpoint then towards the competition when you're going and racing these elite women that you're like, wait a minute, my teammates are just another woman. She's doing the same thing before the race that I'm doing. And then you instead, okay, this is my competition. I can, on a day, I can beat her. She might be good, but like, I got this.
Yeah, I think for sure it helps build confidence because you know, well, yeah, I've done all that training too. Like I've put in these hours, I've put in the time and my skills work. Like, yeah, I can show up and be just as ready as them. Like there's nothing stopping you from doing it. So definitely.
What are you more naturally gifted with, the power or the skills? What do you tend to feel like you need more as you go to the next level?
I think I want to say the skills is probably like my most natural just from growing up. Like, I did a couple enduro races and did a lot of like summer mountain bike camps when I was younger. I think that helped my skills a lot, like from the beginning. But I think they can always be worked on because nowadays, like, World Cups are getting crazier and more gnarly features. So you always want to be on your skills. But I'd say the power is definitely something I've been working on a lot, like that short acceleration, being a really good in a sprint, that's not necessarily my strong suit, so something I'm working on.
What do you guys do to work on that?
Usually I just have some good workouts from Kristen, like specific sprint efforts that really, like, you'd be at threshold, go above threshold, like back and forth, and also just mixing it up with like riding with lots of boys and group rides and kind of moments where you can't always dictate the pace and you just have to put the power out unless you want to get dropped. So,
Do you, is that what you were just at, was it Tucson?
Yeah,
Not
Tucson
Bike
Bicycle
Classic.
Classic.
Oh, you were at
Yeah, that
that.
was the
Okay.
one.
TBC. Yeah. Do you find that's a good benefit of the road is just that reactionary, like somebody goes and you need to quickly decide whether or not you're going with them, following them, sitting in, conserving, or what do you find that you get from the road riding that helps you on the mountain bike or on the cross bike?
Yeah, I definitely think that that is a big piece of it, like reacting to other people's attacks and also trying to make your own, like knowing how hard you need to go to make an attack and try and make it split. So I think, like, especially those circuit races and the crits, those are great for that. I think road racing also helps from a tactical point of view because I think a lot of mountain bikers don't really take into consideration tactics as much. Everyone kind of thinks, oh, it's more of like an individual, like you just get off the front and you do a little time trial effort. But in reality, like especially now with the short tracks, there can be a lot of tactics involved. So getting that experience on the road can help you in the mountain bike races also.
Yeah, it's interesting. When you, I don't know if you look at your own power files much, but like, does a mountain bike, Sevilla was making a similar comment about it's things are getting gnarlier, it's getting faster. Like, does a cross race power-wise feel like a mountain bike race, or what do you notice is the biggest difference if you look back on them now?
I would say they're pretty similar actually, like the power wise. I'd say maybe the only difference is in a cross race you'd have shorter periods off of the power. Like a mountain bike race you might have a bit longer of a descent where you can, actually recover, whereas in cross like it's pretty short. I'd say you might go down a small hill but then you're right back onto the gas again. So,
That's interesting. Okay. So what do you, so you describe yourself as mountain bike and cross, but you're doing some road. What do you really love? What bike do you pick if you're just like, oh, I just want to go rip today? What's coming out?
I think I'd pick the mountain bike. I think it's
Yeah,
my
okay.
first love. Like, I just grew up mountain biking. I mean, but it's hard to put the cross bike away too. Like, if it's a really muddy day out there, that cross bike is calling my name also. But I'd say mountain bike
Okay.
is probably the number one.
Awesome. What do you find is let's dig into some of these. People always are very curious about what athletes at your level are doing for training. Like, what do you find to be the most impactful sessions for the mountain bike?
Well, personally, I really love riding in groups. I think for me, that really helps me. It motivates me. It pushes me. So, honestly, any kind of hard group ride I can do and be a part of, like whether it's on the mountain bike, whether it's on the road bike, I'm always keen for that. So, that's probably for me really effective. And also, just going out and doing kind of like mock simulations every now and then on the mountain bike. So, maybe it's like picking a 10-minute section on trail, doing a really hard effort up the climb, and then while you're fatigued, trying to do the technical descent as well. I think that's pretty good training.
I love that. Do you feel like that's more of a Yolanda free flowing type vibe? Like, do you think Evie's more interval based? Or when you made that comparison, I find that so interesting because I think we're all kind of always looking for like the playbook, right? Like, what's the session that's the best for me? But it's different for everybody. So I love that you brought that up. What have you taken from each of those riders? Maybe the group ride is kind of like what Yolanda would be more free flowing, or like, do you notice Evie, has she taught you anything that you're like, oh, okay, like I can see myself getting into that?
I would agree in the sense that, like, yeah, Yolanda's probably more of a group ride type person, like going out with the boys and just trying to drop them all. Like not even looking at power, not even looking at heart rate. Whereas Evie probably, yeah, is more interval based, like, oh, today I have 30-30s, like 30-second sprints. And I think a balance between the two is really good. I think Kristen is really knowledgeable in power and the types of intervals to make you strong. So I definitely do those. Like I'll go out on the road bike and she'll say, okay, do these 3 minute efforts, like full gas, or today we're gonna do like 30 second sprints. So I think mixing it up, finding the balance between the two is a good happy place.
Since you're doing all these different disciplines, like, do you find that your training has a lot of variety so that you really, like, I'm trying to think of the level you're at, you're going to the next level. It's, you got to have a sprint. You got to be able to push it for 5 minutes. You've got to be able to also, like, there's threshold efforts that happen. Do you find a lot of variety
Totally.
in training to help you mimic the racing that you're going to be doing?
Yeah, definitely. I think doing multiple disciplines, like trying to mix it up on the road and racing cross in the winter, like those will really help your race efforts. And I think also just keeping you mentally fresh and like finding any way you can to kind of get a slight edge on the competition because, at the end of the day, like everyone is kind of doing the same types of intervals. Like, okay, we're gonna go out and do 5 minute VO2s. Like, so finding different ways, like whether it's mixing it up on the road or doing a winter of cyclocross, like that might help you get that extra advantage in racing is super important for those.
What else besides having variety in training keeps you mentally fresh? And
I
maybe it's
think,
not even something training wise, didn't mean to
yeah.
cut you off, but like something off the bike.
No, totally. I think it's good you said that because I would say it's definitely off the bike. Like, just finding those people and those things that really bring you joy when you're not cycling, just kind of to remind you that, we are professional athletes, but there's also more to life than cycling. And so you don't get so focused in on the sport that you get burnt out. But for me, like, I'm a super big family person and I love spending time with my family. So really anything I can do with them, like if it's walking the dog, going for hikes, like cooking or baking, anything like that is just it's just nice to be spend time with them and be in their company.
What's your best dish?
Oh, I really like to bake banana bread. I'd say
Oh,
that's a
okay.
pretty good one.
You've
Or
got some
cookies.
cycling friends, I'm sure, that love that. When you,
Everyone loves it, I think. And everyone likes to bake it, I think too. So it's a good
That's
one.
amazing. Yes. There's always bananas. So it's like, oh, we got these bananas are going brown.
Exactly.
Somebody make
And I
banana bread.
just
Yeah,
make
it's
some bread.
perfect. What? As you're going through your training journey, and maybe this is even like racing, have you ever made some missteps where you started trying something, you and Chris were like, ah, maybe that's not for you, that like you don't seem to be responding too well to that, or maybe you rode too much, or just something that I don't want to say mi mistake, but something that you just learn from. You're like, okay, that wasn't for me, but like I've grown from this scenario.
Definitely. I think there's kind of areas, within an individual race, like small mistakes I've made that I've really learned from, like I'm not going to do that again. Or maybe some bigger things like, going to, like, for example, we have a team training camp in January every year. And I remember last year I was really excited, wanted to race, like my race my bike, ride as much as I could with the road team because the Trek road team was also there. But I had Cyclocross Worlds coming up in a couple weeks after the camp, so my coach was, reminding me to keep it not too crazy hard and not to do too many hours. And I think I overdid it a little bit on the hours, like every day just maybe rode a bit too much, and I think that kind of caught up with me in the end, made me a little bit tired before this big race. So that was definitely something to listen and learn from, like just really, sticking to my plan and what Kristen has for me because usually she's right when she writes it down. I'd say that was probably a big one.
That's awesome to hear because that is a tricky thing, though. I mean, to sort of be on your side of that one, it's that fatigue that slowly adds up. Like in the moment, you don't feel it. And then you kind of jump go over the cliff a little bit. It's like, oh, damn. Okay, I did overdo it. And so it, again, it's just something that I think a lot of us don't think people at your level even deal with that. And it's like, oh, they're so dialed all the time. They're a pro. And it's like, no, like they're human and they're, they want to ride just as bad as the amateurs do. So I appreciate you sharing that. That's definitely helpful as we're all like, okay, maybe I don't, if it says 3 hours, stick to three hours.
Yeah, exactly. I think more people than you think too, like you said, are susceptible to it. Like we all have overtrained and overdone it. And then, yeah, it's kind of like, you only know when it's a little bit too late. So,
I mean, I think it's really been, we've been doing this podcast for a few years now. And I think that's been one of the coolest things is just to see the human side of all of these people that we look up to. And just as you're saying, I mean, you have people that see you on Instagram and they're like, wow, I can't believe like all these races she's doing, all this stuff. And you're still like, you're having similar thoughts as the athlete who's just coming up. And, you know, it's, yeah, it's been really cool to just see the human side of everybody and how they're approaching training and racing and the differences. And as you pointed out with the teammates that just both crushing, but just doing it different ways. So
totally. Yeah.
What are some, say you're going out for either a hard group ride or you've got, Kristen puts down an interval session that you know is going to be super difficult. Like where's your head at for that? What are you thinking going in or how do you, and maybe, I always think of it as like, I can't just go like, I'm like, oh, I'm doing VO2 in the next 10 minutes. And I go out. Like I'm more, I'm like thinking through it and like I'm preparing. I ate for it. Like how do you prep for hard rides? Or are you just like, YOLO, let's go. I can do whatever, whenever.
Yeah. I'd say more of the former, because I think I'm definitely a bit of a type A perfectionist kind of person. Mm. And I am a bit methodical. Like I like to have things planned out. So I'd say, yeah, honestly, I'll see if I have like a VO2 workout, I'll see, okay, the night before I'm like, all right, what am I going to have for breakfast? What am I going to do in the morning? And I'll kind of plan it all out. Like I'll do some activations before I even get on my bike, just almost like treat it like a race, because it's kind of nice to get in that mindset and it gets me excited. Like, okay, I'm going to go do these really hard intervals and it's going to pay off and it's going to hurt. But you know, like that's what I'm training for. Like this is going to help me in the race. So I think I'm pretty excited mentally going into it. Same with a group ride. Like I just am ready to go. And, but yeah, there's definitely planning that goes into it beforehand.
What kind of activation sessions do you do?
Usually just like 10 to 15 minutes. I have a little band, like we'll do a lot of like, I don't know if you know, like monster walks, like you're going back and forth with the band around your knees, like doing some squats, like just kind of light stuff like that. Maybe a little bit of core too, to get that activated. If I'm feeling like really tight, maybe like some quad stretching or something like that, some leg swings. Yeah.
Awesome. Very cool. I know I'm working with, they're on Instagram as glute dopers. I've had some back pain. So I'm like, when people mention bands and like activation, they're in their videos, they're like, always activating. We're always activating. Yeah, and so when you said bands, I'm like, oh, what are you doing? Yeah. Those have been really beneficial for me. I think that's it's sometimes easy, I think, for athletes to ignore the little things that can have such a big difference as activating. And so I don't think if, you talked about that 10 years ago, I don't think many people were even considering it. And now bands, it's like everybody has bands and they're activating all the time. So do you do other gym work or strength work?
I usually go to the gym like 2 to 3 days a week. So I have another coach who helps me write all my gym programming. And she kind of works with Kristen just to like see my overall training schedule. But yeah, usually I'll do 2 to 3 days. Like we're super lucky here at school. We have access to a really nice gym. So just pop in there. Usually it's like an hour long and it has like squats, deadlifts, lots of core and mobility also. Yeah.
I love that. So let's go in on that a little bit more. How many hours do you think you're normally riding? And then if you're doing 2 to 3 gym sessions, that would be like 2 to 3 hours, as you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. And then usually I've been doing like 12 to 15 hours recently. Like that's kind of my base season number. Yeah. And then a couple hours, in the gym. I do like to stretch and do a lot of like yoga and stuff as well. So normally I'm like, it's a bit harder to fit that in like with school and training, but I'll try and do at least like 15, 20 minutes every day if I can of stretching and rolling. Yeah.
What do you guys do? So does your gym program switch as you go through different phases of the season, or do you try and keep it pretty consistent?
I'd say it's generally pretty consistent. Maybe the weight will change a bit. So, like a bit, little bit lower weight and higher reps as you get more into race season. And maybe less so on the legs and more kind of just maintaining that overall strength. So, like, again, the core and like kind of your midline area, like really focusing on that during race season just to keep it strong. And then base season, like, we can definitely go heavier, go harder. You can be a little bit more sore and fatigued in the base season because you don't need to be fresh for racing. So, yeah.
What's your favorite lift?
Ooh, probably just back squats, honestly. I never get tired of
Okay.
them.
Okay, fair enough. I'm a deadlifter, but squats,
Nice.
that's
All
number
right.
two. I mean, I guess that's the other major one, but yeah.
True.
So you kind of talked about some long-term goals, and you might have snuck in the earlier season or this year's goals, but what do you see as the biggest goal for 2024?
I think the biggest goal for 2024, I probably have two actually. One is to podium at World Champs. That's
Okay.
one of them. And then the next is probably to be in the top five of the overall for the World Cup season. So that's like accumulating all the races and kind of means like you need a general consistency in every race. Yeah.
Do you think training changes at all for like, I'm always curious about those like long series, say world champs, obviously one day, series a whole month's long. Does that change your training at all, or how you look at races, or because you're not really going all in for one except for world champs? You know what I'm saying? Like,
Yeah, definitely. I think it
it's how do you balance all that?
yeah, it changes a little bit, I think, in the sense that, like as my coach, Kristen can kind of set me up like in the weeks and month leading up to Worlds to really peak for that race. So like that just changes the training a bit, like maybe the intervals become shorter, higher to intensity, and then we take like a taper week or like a little rest period before Worlds to kind of like let that all settle in before the race. But I'd say at the same time, like since we are going for consistency too, it's about like the long term and also not overdoing it now in the base season so that I can still be fresh when I need to in October and do well in those later races. But I think like mentally is probably the biggest place to train, honestly, for a world champs because it's a one day event and there is high pressure to perform on that day. I think that's what takes more of the training is to not let that kind of derail your physical training that you've done.
So you had mentioned the taper. Do you taper? How does that? Let's talk maybe or whatever. And if you don't feel like getting into the details, we don't have to. But like maybe the 2 weeks going into the race, like do you do that big last block 2 weeks before, or is that 3 weeks before, or like what works for you so far?
I'd say it's probably around three weeks, 2 or 3 weeks. I think we've kind of done both in the past. And then it's sort of like, yeah, maybe 2 weeks before is like the last hard training. And then we kind of, we usually fly to Worlds wherever it is. Like this year it's in Andorra. So we'll go there, kind of spend a week like riding easy, but just getting to know the course, like the area, getting settled in over the jet lag. All those kinds of things contribute to the like just not training as much in general, like, shorter rides, easier rides. So that's like the week before. And then just a little opener session the day or two before the actual race, and then good to go.
How do you do with the travel? I've always, I think when it's as a professional rider, I think amateurs, we forget the difference of, I'll use an example. I went to Tour New Zealand, Tour Southland they call it, but it's in New Zealand. And for me, I was like, oh, this is amazing. I'm going to New Zealand. But there was less pressure because it's not my job. And I think as a professional, there's just more going on behind the scenes and everything. Like, how do you manage the travel to a totally different place? Like you said before, you got to kind of like set up your home base and be ready for one of the biggest races of your life that weekend. Do you do well in that scenario? How do you stay like grounded in all of that? Like, it could be chaotic, I'm sure, for some riders. Is that a challenge for you, or do you thrive in that?
It definitely can be chaotic, especially, when it's travel and stuff can go wrong and all of a sudden you don't have no bags and no bikes, which has happened to me
Has that
before.
happened?
But
Oh no.
yes, the very first mountain bike world champs I went to in Canada as like a 16-year-old, my bikes and my bag didn't show up for like 3 days before the race, and it was quite a process to track them down as well and get them, but it all
So
worked out in the end.
what did you do over those 3 days? Did you borrow a bike?
I
Did you just not
nope, I
ride?
just hung out. Yeah. Just
Oh
didn't
my
ride,
gosh.
like did a lot of hanging out at the hotel, like a lot of calls with all the airlines and like bag people to track down the bags
Oh.
and yeah. But
Oh
I think
my
because I was so
gosh.
young, I was like, well, okay, this is what's happening.
Yeah, going
But
with the flow on life's
yeah,
terms.
exactly. And I think that's one of the biggest things is just like, yeah, you never know what's going to happen with travel, so you just kind of have to be ready for anything. But I feel like I generally do pretty well with the travel and the jet lag and adjusting to the new time zones and everything. I think the more I do it, the more I learn what helps me get through the jet lag, what makes me feel at home when I'm away, like things I can bring with me on my travels, like, small things like, oh, I really like this face lotion or like my eye mask and all of that are like super important to just making me feel a bit more at home, like your favorite PJs, anything like that. And then, also just knowing like it's not always going to be perfect. Like sometimes you get over there and you can't really sleep well for a couple days, but hopefully you're not the only one. And like at the end of the day, it is what it is. So you just kind of try and accept it and keep going with the flow, like you said. But yeah, not let it stress you out, because then your racing probably will be not as good.
The stress is bad for going
Yeah,
fast, I feel like.
exactly. It is.
What's the jet lag tricks that you have up your sleeve?
I usually just the biggest one for me is like obviously the first day you get to Europe, staying awake until like 8 to 9 p.m. Then I'm a big fan of like sleepy time tea, cherry juice. I usually drink that before I go to bed because it has like some natural melatonin, good for inflammation. And then I'll always have like a noise app on my phone with me so I can like play some rain or something like that when I'm sleeping. And books. I really like to read. So always like if I really can't fall asleep, I'll just read a book for a little bit.
What types of books do you lean into the most?
Honestly, everything. I love fiction, nonfiction too, like historical fiction, but I really am open to any kind of books. Like, I've read all the categories, so
Okay.
pretty
What's your
much.
major in school?
Biology, like cellular
Okay.
molecular.
What drew you into that?
I had a high school teacher, actually. I took an anatomy class in my senior year and was like, wow, I really love this. Like, I think I want to go into medical field one day after cycling. So whatever degree is going to set me up for that, and just happened to be biology. But I've always loved science, like science and math the most. So I always knew it was going to be something along those lines. But then, yeah, I took this class and was like, this is so cool. I want to keep doing this. Yeah.
What do you think you'd want to do in medicine or in science?
Yeah, I think going to a physician's assistant school, like becoming a PA, would probably be my number one choice right now. But as far as
Cool.
like actual area, like what kind of PA, haven't gotten that far yet, 'cause I think
Yeah.
it's all pretty interesting. So, yeah.
100%. Yeah, I used to sell medical devices, so I know a lot
Oh,
of
no
PAs,
way.
and yeah, they all seem very into their profession,
Yeah.
and yeah, just seem super stoked about it. And they're like, I'm just glad I'm not the physician that has to deal with all these patients all the time. And
Yeah,
so, like, it was
yeah.
a nice middle ground, I guess we could say.
Yeah, I think that's the best part about it. Like, you go to less school, but you can do pretty much all the same things as a doctor,
It's
and you don't have as much liability.
yeah.
So,
Well
yeah.
said. You're thinking, yeah, it's
Yeah,
amazing
yeah.
how much they can do, how much they know. It's
Yeah.
yeah,
It's
it's
pretty
super
cool.
cool. What do you think? What's maybe off the bike? What's like a really good piece of advice that you've received that you're kind of carrying with you? Anything that you think of like often?
I think it relates to on the bike, but Just having confidence. Like, I think that's a really important part. Like, the older I get and the more people I talk to and interactions I have and the more I go to school, I think just having like a good sense of self-belief and knowing you can do what you set your mind to is really valuable and can take you pretty far. Yeah.
So you mentioned this when you were talking about Kristen, like have working on belief in yourself. What do you think, if you can be a little vulnerable in
Yeah.
this, like what I think that would surprise people, like all these things that you've accomplished, you're so young, so accomplished. Like I think that surprises people to be like, wait, you're working on self-belief? Like
Yeah.
what do you feel holds you back a little bit, or what do you not
Yeah.
believe in? Like when you like, come on, let's go, I got this. Like what do
Yeah. I think it's like I think if you talk to my parents, they would be laughing right now probably because of the amount of times like they've heard me say like, "Well, what if I'm not fast enough?" Or like, "What if so and so beats me because they did this and I didn't?" And what if I'm just not good enough to be racing at this level? Like, I think it's pretty normal for athletes to go through that. Like, I think some people are really good at hiding it. And I think, yeah, a lot of people wouldn't think that, but I definitely go through that and just kind of like, the doubt of like, well, what if I can't win or what if I can't be a world champion? So just working on like not focusing so much on that and thinking about the reasons you are strong and you are capable of being an athlete and why I'm on a professional team in the first place. Like, obviously, I had to get there somehow, so there's something getting me going. But yeah, I think it's hard not to like compare yourself to others. I think that's the biggest thing, too.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's incredible. I think that's, do you lean to, so you mentioned your parents, do you lean to your parents or to Kristen or to like a friend, or who's your number one? Like, I think we all have those times like, yo, I need somebody to pump me up right now. Like, where's my
Yeah.
hype man? And
Yeah.
is there someone that you go to the most?
I'd say there's probably two people. Like, my dad is like basically my second coach, second everything. Like, and I mean, number one dad, but he does it all.
Shout
Like,
out,
he's,
Dad.
yeah, he's the hype man, he's the agent, the manager, like the coach, the dad. But I do work with a sports psychologist, so I'll talk with her like at least every couple weeks. Like, if it's really in race season crunch time, maybe I'll talk with her every week just briefly, but I'll text her a lot too. So usually it's her or my dad.
That's amazing. What's
Yeah.
how long have you been working with the sports psychologist for?
I've actually been working with her since I was 16, so
So
quite a
what
while
types of
now.
things? Yeah, this is super cool. What do you think besides the confidence have you received from that relationship?
Well, I think one of the biggest reasons I started working with her was actually in high school, just because I am kind of a perfectionist and was struggling with like all the anxiety and stress of trying to get all A's all the time, get into like the best school I could. And so just working with her to kind of like let go of some of that perfectionism and trying to be really like excellent instead of perfect all the time. So I think she's really helped me with that and showing like that, this ideal of like being the best in everything all the time is pretty unrealistic and we can't do it. So, choosing those things you want to be really strong in and putting full commitment into those things. So I think she's helped me a lot with that. Yeah.
That's really cool. Do you think that you get more from that for life guidance or cycling
I'd
psychology?
say definitely, I think both actually. I think they go pretty hand in hand because I find when I get pretty like stressed in life, like maybe about school, it kind of starts to transfer over into cycling too. Like, maybe I'm not doing super well in school and then I kind of start to like second guess my training or like how I'm doing on the bike. And I think for me, they kind of go back and forth. Like, when one's not doing super well, the other might not be either. So yeah, I think it's a balance.
It's interesting to hear you say that because I feel like a lot of the athletes that I work with might be masters athletes or older amateurs that like Americans that just find the sport really late. They started riding when they're 30 and they're like, oh, wait, I want to get my Cat One. And you see that like their work life sometimes parallels their cycling. Like things aren't good at work and they're just, their training is kind of crap and they're just, you know, they're tired or they're not motivated or they just can't, like, do you see things paralleling like school and this, like, you know, you as the person and you as a cyclist, like sometimes they're oddly interrelated, it seems.
Yeah, I would definitely agree that they can be interrelated. Like, I think just because I'm so committed to both, like you're putting all this effort into school and to cycling. So when you feel like you're not putting enough into school or you're not putting enough into cycling, like the other one starts to kind of drop as well. But I would also say, like, kind of to counter that as well, like sometimes cycling is, or cycling usually has been, like the best release for me. Like, you know, when I'm having a really bad day or like school is not going well and I can get on my bike and just go ride, like training, racing, it's kind of like reminds me why I love cycling. Like this is my passion and can give you that escape from like real world pretty much, like doing school and for people who are working. So I think it can kind of go both ways, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I love that. Yeah. It's a good reminder of there's a cyclist still in the bike racer. And it's just like, why did you start riding? Because it was fun. Like there was, you know, like the brain was like, oh, this is cool. I'm going to go pedal this bike for a while.
Yeah.
What, anything unique about like nutritional choices or on the bike fueling or things like that? People are always curious about what are you doing?
I think I don't really have any special like, oh, whoa, that's crazy. I would say probably just the most like defining thing about me is I have a huge sweet tooth. So like, you know, a pint of Ben and Jerry's is probably like my biggest weakness. And I could easily eat one of those after like any kind of training session.
Yes, let's go.
Yeah.
What's the favorite flavor?
Oh, probably fish food. Okay. There's one called the peanut butter half baked, which is like peanut butter cookie dough with chocolate ice cream. Anything chocolate though, that's
okay.
It. Yeah,
I'm on a cookies and cream streak, so we're not like totally in line there, but yeah.
But I respect it. That's pretty good too.
There's Whole Foods is our grocery store here, and they have this brand Aldean's, which I'd never heard of before, and it is like, ooh, dang, it is
that's
fire.
Awesome.
Yeah,
I know.
What are you doing? What are you doing on the bike? That does this change? Because again, being a roadie, I can eat almost not at any point of the race, but there's definitely better times to eat than others. But I'm not descending over a rock garden and da, 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 and like, you know, across, it's shorter so that you don't really need to eat as much or if any, depending on who you talk to. Does your nutrition shift from discipline to discipline, or are you pretty standard, like this is what I do all the time?
Yeah, I'd say it's a little different. Like cross and mountain biking is a little different because you're right, cross is shorter and like we actually don't even have water bottle cages on our bike. So yeah, I won't drink any water for like 45 minutes, which is kind of bizarre to think about. I don't know how that's become a thing in cross, but it just is. So
we has it really always been that way?
Because... it's always been that way. Like, yeah, okay. I don't really know.
Huh.
And recently people have started to kind of like take a gel during the race, maybe like one gel. But that's pretty new. Like that's like maybe the past 2 years people have started doing that. So maybe I would take a gel in a cross race, but in a mountain bike race, I'd say like my fueling is pretty dialed. And that's usually like, I'll have a gel 15 minutes before the start, usually something with caffeine in it. And then I'll plan out that I have like 60 grams of carbs in my water bottles for every hour. So like every time I go through the feed zone, I'll usually take half a bottle, like just so I can finish the whole thing. It's a little bit lighter and that will have drink mix in it. Our team sponsor is OTE, so we just use their drink mix. And then I'll usually take 1 to 2 gels during the race as well, spaced out, like depending, usually one, but if I'm like feeling super bad, maybe, you know, sometimes you just take another gel to give you this adrenaline shot or like placebo, maybe, like even if it doesn't work,
the brain is like, I'm faster now. Yeah,
like, okay, I'm ready. Yeah, so that will be my mountain bike race nutrition.
Does OTE make the gels also, or what gels do you use?
They do make the gels also, yes.
Okay. And how much caffeine do you take before the race?
It kind of varies like race to race. Usually the gels are like I want to say 35 or 40 milligrams. So I'll
Okay.
usually just do one of those, like one serving of the 35 grams. But then I'll always have, like a cup of coffee before the race, like with breakfast. So I'll do some caffeine that way as well.
Okay. Yeah, I'm curious because some people are taking these, what I think is like a crazy amount of caffeine. So I forget somebody was like, yeah, it's like
Oh, yeah.
150. I was like,
Yeah.
150 milligrams in one
Yeah.
go? And I
They
mean,
make
there's
these
gels
gels
out there
with,
now.
with 100 grams. I'm like, you guys are crazy.
Yeah, I'm way too sensitive for that, but it worked for some
Me
people, I
too.
guess. I don't know.
Yeah. I wouldn't be able to ride my bike if I had that much caffeine, I don't think.
I think there's a downside to it at some point.
Yeah.
I mean, and I actually don't know. USADA, there's a caffeine limit, which I should actually look up what that
There,
is. I know it's a
yeah,
ridiculous number,
it's pretty
but it's like,
high, but
I guess that's so like people don't take caffeine pills too much or
yeah,
something, I would
maybe something
guess.
like
I
that, but who knows?
don't know. What's the hardest race that you've ever done before?
Ooh, probably a race that didn't go super well for me. Like, I can think of one world champs in Val de Soleil when I was a first year under 23. And I think it was, first of all, hard because that course is brutal. Like, it's really hard climbing, technical, steep descents. Like, you're just always on. Like, your brain is always going, like, whether it's pushing really hard to climb or like focusing on the descent. But then I think also because I just wasn't having the best race, like the mental aspect of like just keep going, like even as riders are passing you or you're not making up ground, it's like I'm gonna finish this race, but it feels really bad. Like my legs are not responding, my brain's not in it, and it's just one of those races that's hard to get to the finish line, which
Do
is
you
pretty
chalk
rare.
that up? Yeah, like when you have those days, do you just like it's a bad day? Can you look back on anything that you did differently? Or because I can imagine that was your finish, you're super frustrated. Was there anything that you could take from that, or was it just a bad day?
I think sometimes you can take stuff. Like, I've also had races where I've made physical errors, like, maybe I crashed somewhere where I could have avoided it, and that kind of derailed my race. And I can look back on that and say, okay, next time I'm going to be a little bit more prepared, like which line I'm going to take or where I'm going to ride this section. But I'd say for that race in particular, I think I just wasn't quite there on the day. Like, I just wasn't having the best day, and it was kind of hard to pinpoint why. But yeah, I think every now and then we just do have off days, and it's kind of just the nature of it.
Right. So this is a newbie question. When you're talking about picking the right line, and I've done very little cross racing, but no mountain biking. So I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, okay, you're getting to pre-ride the course. You see some obvious lines. You do a couple laps and assume like at a race pace, because that's obviously different than cruising pace. The terrain might change. Like, how does your choice of the line evolve as the race goes along? Obviously, it depends if a woman's next to you or whatever, you're passing somebody, like that dictates things. But how does that, because people have started talking about this more and more, it seems like little details of the course, like every second over time does matter. How does that change as the race goes on?
Yeah, for sure. I think the seconds are super important. And I think as the race kind of progresses, like I think usually you go into the race, we've had a couple days of pre-riding. A lot of teams nowadays have specific skills coaches that will ride the course with them and help them choose lines. So we'll go through. There's usually sections that have what's called like an A and B line. So there will be like a feature, maybe it's a drop. And the A line, you go off the drop, whereas the B line is going to be a bit slower. You go around the drop, but obviously, if you're too scared to ride the drop or you just can't right then, you go around, but you'll probably lose a couple seconds there. So you're looking at those kinds of lines, but then you're also looking at like these small seconds that can be gained. Like, can you take this line through the corner differently? And if you can make up 2 seconds every lap, like 6 laps, that's 12 seconds. Like, you could be, moving up 2 spots by that. So I think those little places are really important too. And those are probably what we look at. And then I'd say what changes as the race is like, yeah, if there's a girl in your line, maybe you say, okay, I know there's another line here. I'm going to take this one so I keep my speed up or something. Or I need to make a pass, like I'm going to take that line.
So I was watching some mountain bike races a couple weekends ago, and I can't remember they were old ones. I can't remember which one it was, but the announcer was, and you're helping me understand this better. There was a what I would consider a mega drop. Like it
Yeah,
was, I was
you're
scared
scary.
watching these guys. Yeah, so and it was split. Like some people were trying to go down it like more times than other people, and they were kind of having this discussion that you were having. And there was a point in the race where the announcer was shocked that the guy went down the drop, so I guess that would be the A line. And he had mentioned like the timing, like these guys were duking it out before this. So when you're saying like, hey, it just might not be the right time, is that like you just might be fatigued? And you're like, there's no way in hell I'm going over that because I'll probably just biff it, or like because it's
Exactly.
so
Like,
hard for us that if I haven't done that race, I can't get that feeling from watching it. So is that
yeah.
the decision? Like I'm just gassed. I'm gonna go the quote unquote easier route around that and maybe lose a couple seconds.
It definitely can be. I'd say it's like, especially for someone like me, where I know sometimes, when I hit these big features and I'm not 100% mentally focused, like I will crash. And it's just because, you're so in the red that, like, if you can't ride this section smooth, like it's worse to crash and lose time crashing than to just go around and be the safe line. And also, like, if maybe you're leading the race by like 30 seconds or something, and like there's risk to this line. Like, I could go off the drop and I could crash, but I can be safe and go around and make sure I win, like. So I think it's moments like that where it's important to have that A and B line, because at times it could be faster to do the A. Like, I need to pass this rider to make the win, and the only way to do it is to go on that A line. So it's like about having these different lines in your back pocket so you know when to use them and when to play it safe, maybe.
So are you going to Lake Placid this year?
I am. Yes, I will be there.
Have you been up there at all? Because they
I
don't,
know.
do they, are they making, they're making the course now, right? Am I right on
I
that?
that's what I've heard, but I'm not super sure.
Okay. So I was talking to some people that are mountain bikers and they're like, they live up near that area and they're like,
Oh
ah, it's
yeah.
fingers crossed. Like, we don't know where exactly they're doing this, like what the course is going to be like. But I know people are pumped, but
I'm
that'll be,
curious.
well, yeah, me too. This, it's been very, you mountain bikers have like exposed me to my first coach, actually. Jason Hillemeyer was a pro mountain biker and we linked up. He was coaching people on the road also, and so he was the last person that really had me interested about it until I started just coaching other athletes and then now talking to people on the podcast. And so I've been, I don't think I'll ever mountain bike because I'm terrible off-road, but the racing is super fun to watch.
It's
So I'm
exciting.
like, man, yeah, it's a different beast. Some
Totally.
it's frightening to me, but I want to respect your time, and this has been incredible.
Thank you.
Is there anything that we maybe missed or that you want to pass along or even some like final words for a younger rider or newer rider that's like just blown away at everything that you've accomplished and maybe some words of encouragement to them?
I'd say what I usually tell young riders when I work with them or see them is, I think the biggest thing is just keeping it fun when you're young. Like, reminding yourself why you love to ride your bike, because as long as you have that, like, you can do anything you want with this sport. You can go pro, you can ride for fun every day on the weekends, whenever. But I think as long as you know what your why is, like why this sport means so much to you, then it's yours for the taking. So yeah, don't
I
forget
love
that.
that. Very wise words.
Thank
And we'll
you.
post your Instagram below. Are you on Twitter
Perfect.
or do you blog
I'm
or what are the
actually
best ways
not,
for people? No.
mostly just Instagram, to be honest.
That's the trend these days. I was thinking you maybe were going to say TikTok, but it's not.
Surprisingly, I don't have a TikTok, actually.
That's probably for the better. It's like everyone's like, who has it says there's a black hole, and they're like, it's 10 times worse than Instagram. Like, I don't have time for this. I'm deleting it. So,
Which is why I
Maddie,
never
thank you
got
so
it.
much. It's smart. You have too many other things going on. So,
But
everybody, give her a follow on Instagram. Are you on Strava, though?
I am, yes.
Okay, check out
Same Strava,
Strava. We'll be rooting for you this year. Everybody,
Thank
thanks
you.
for tuning in. Good luck with your training and racing, and we'll talk to you all soon.